You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 55 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, January 21st, 2009. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we are your weekly hosts for a conversation about technology and where that happens to intersect with ministry. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. How are you today?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm very good. I have reached the milestone in my life. I have 100 Facebook friends. So.
I think you're ahead of me.
My Facebook.
So you must have been working at that.
Yeah, I have, and you know, it's pretty amazing. I've connected with people from high school 25 years ago. I haven't seen or heard from these people. Even my high school chemistry teacher, who it turns out has he left my hometown in 1983 when I graduated from high school to do 3 years of teaching in India. Mm-hmm. And since then he's taught all over the world, and it's just amazing to reconnect with this guy. Right now he's teaching in Indonesia, and he's had quite the life. And so
wonderful things
Facebook
we can do
is,
online. Yeah, I don't know that my chemistry professor is still alive yet. That tells you how old I am. And he was a good guy. I would love to reconnect with him, but I don't know if he's on Facebook or alive and kicking. But I'm going to have to go on a Facebook drive. You know, you've thrown down the gauntlet. So 100 is a good goal. So congratulations.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Oh, well, good to hear. I'd like to, before we jump into our conversation of the day, which we're going to actually let our interview do most of the talking for us. We have John Shoesmith. I knew I was going to mess that up. Shoesmith from Yakima, Washington, with us to talk about closed captioning. But I wanted to revisit a topic that we talked about last week. As our listeners know, we're on listening to our last week's podcast. They knew I was teaching a course at the seminary on time management called Mind Like Water, The Art of Productivity. Had a great time, had a couple hours each morning with seminary students and one pastor. We did some interviews there as well that we played last week. And one of the things that I shared with the class, as it were, it was a great article that I'd like to share with all of our listeners that I think is a great read for anybody who does any kind of writing. And obviously this would apply to our pastors in particular. I think this is a must read for our pastors. It takes about 5 minutes, but it's about how to kind of clear the distractions from off the table when you're getting in that writing mode so that you can be very productive. And especially writing those sermons or doing sermon studies or whatever. It's not written by a pastor. It's written by a science fiction author. His name is Cory Doctorow. Maybe some of you have heard of him. He's done a bunch of science fiction novels. He kind of mixes that with technology. He's done some articles for Wired, Popular Science, Make Magazine. I think he's even had some articles in the New York Times. Well-respected author. And I think he's got some great concepts here on how to write what he calls writing in the age of distraction. We'll put a link to this in our show notes, but just a couple of the things that he talks about. He talks about, and this may not be totally applicable to sermon writing, but you know, maybe there's some value here too. He talks about trying to write in 20-minute segments. Most people can find 20 minutes during a day or a bunch of 20 minutes during the day to sit down and write. So he recommends at least doing that. And a couple of other things. He says, one thing that I really picked up on is don't do research while you're writing. I think we fall into the trap when we're writing to think, well, I got to look this up. He uses the example of, you know, quoting how long the Brooklyn Bridge was. So instead of actually beginning your sentence, the Brooklyn Bridge, all, you know, whatever feet of it, sailed into the air like a kite, he suggests just put a placeholder in there. Don't resist the temptation of going out on the internet and doing research in the midst of your creative process, because really you can get sidetracked so easily, as we, you know, as we all would attest to, Sally, that once you get out there, there's hyperlinks, there's other interesting things, there's just a whole other, you know, side of the web that would tempt us to move away from our mission, and then by that time, you know, we've spent a half hour, an hour, 2 hours, you know, on some sites that really didn't do us much good in the creative writing process. So I found that real useful. So he said, what, instead of doing that, just put a little placeholder. He uses the initials TK because he felt that that did not come up in too many sentences or words in the English language in that combination by itself. So when you're done with your creative process, just do a search for TK and then go do your research when you're not in the midst of that creative writing process.
Sounds like a good recommendation. I just think he's maybe taking some of the fun out of me. I'm a real procrastinator, and,
that's right.
And doing that research right then takes me away from the work at hand.
Exactly. Two other things, and I'm not going to read the whole article for you guys, but I would definitely recommend a quick read of this. He says, kill your word processor. Tools like Word or even Google Office and OpenOffice, they come with a what he calls a bewildering array of typesetting and automation settings that you can play with forever. He says, forget it. Use a bare-bones text editor where all you basically have is the ability to type text, hit enter, go to the next paragraph. Don't worry about formatting. Just get all that stuff out of the way. Those are all distractions. You can obviously go back and pretty it up, but why distract yourselves when you're in that creative writing process? And then finally, real-time communication tools are deadly is his last point. I would attest to this. If you've got IM running or email alerts or RSS alerts or Skype ringing, all of those are obviously interrupting the creative process. Turn all of those off when you're in this zone, as he calls it. They all scream, distract me, you know, talk to me, do something else other than what you're trying to do. And obviously it would take much longer if you're interrupted. Just like people walking into your office or calling you on the phone, all of these things are very distracting. So great, 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 great article. I would highly recommend it.
You know, I get a real kick out of that second one about not getting lured in by all the word processing gadgets and things. Working with kids in the computer lab, mm-hmm. if I have them type up a paragraph even, they will type literally one word before they start changing the font and the font size and the color and the background color and everything else associated with it, because that's just a lot more fun than actually doing the work of the writing and everything.
Oh, so, absolutely.
I could see just teaching them to type in a text editor would make my life a lot simpler.
Yep, there's some discipline there, of course, but I think those are all great ideas. Mm-hmm. Okay, so just a little backtracking there. I'm going to come back to productivity and my tips and picks of the week, but for now we're going to move into a quick discussion on the technology, which has been around a long time, but now we're trying to apply it to web streaming and video streaming on the internet, and that is closed captioning. We had the privilege of speaking with John Shoesmith from our church in Yakima, Washington, Redeemer Lutheran. He's done quite a bit of work here, probably one of the first within our synod to do so. And we've done a little bit of preparation once we had the interview with John, which we had the opportunity to do last week, I believe it was, or maybe even a couple weeks ago. A number of things have happened since that interview to give you a little bit more of a full flavor of what the possibilities are with closed captioning. Sally, what do we have available as we're talking about closed captioning on our website at this point?
Well, in our show notes, we're going to include a link to a brand new page in our Wells Tech Wiki. John has been gracious enough to share a lot of his knowledge, a lot of links to the software resources and the techniques that he's using for closed captioning. And from that information, we've built this wiki page, which, of course, being a wiki, it's open for all of our listeners to contribute to as well. So just a wealth of resources there if you're interested at all in getting started with closed captioning. We have it there for you on our wiki page, so we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Great. Yeah, and again, that was one of our New Year's resolutions, is to get more traffic over to that wiki page and get some more contributions. So if you have things to add for closed captioning or any of the other topics that are on that page, please do so.
definitely. In addition, John shared some specific resources with us, some feedback and things from the people that have been using his closed captioning sermons. And it's just really, really exciting to hear. You're going to hear John talk about it in our interview, but people have written him with comments like, "I'm in tears. You know, this speaks to me because I've not been able to hear the word in this way." And just really exciting to see the reach that the sermons are having.
Yeah, we don't often think of those with, if we don't have a disability ourselves, sometimes we don't think of meeting the needs of those with disabilities. We had a show, I think, in the middle of last year where we talked with Carl Ziemer about ministering to those with disabilities. Maybe we can put a link to that in the show notes as well, because we did talk about some tools there.
That's right. So we'll make sure and dig that one up as well. There's a lot of great resources available for converting speech to text and for making your website more compliant for people with disabilities and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I think you're going to be really amazed at the kind of stats that John has to share with us about the reach of these closed caption sermons. And he's provided some graphs to us and things like that. All these things are out on the web and accessible by our listeners. So be sure to check out the resources that John's provided.
So without further ado, let's listen to our conversation with John Shoesmith. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast is John Shoesmith, Wells member from Yakima, Washington, member of Redeemer Lutheran Church there. Welcome to the show, John. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Good morning.
You are a frequent contributor, and we thought, boy, it's high time that we talk to one of the listeners who's contributed actually so much to the show, and we really appreciate that and would encourage all of our other listeners to do the same. Why don't you maybe begin by telling us a little bit about who John Shoesmith is and how you're involved in technology, whether that be professionally or, you know, certainly at your church.
Well, I was, before moving to Yakima, or right after moving to Yakima, I was asked to redesign the church's webpage. And I only have a scanty background in HTML. I don't know a lot of things that you probably do with ASP or AJAX and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I, a couple of years ago, I was asked to redo the web page. And shortly after that, thought, you know, what would it be like to put some videos of sermons online? And we had the equipment. We have the, you know, media software and a regular digital camera that I had. And after we did that for about 3 months, I found an article from, it was a news release talking about how Google would start doing allowing closed captions on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that, YouTube and AOL and a bunch of people. But I started looking into that and found out that 2 years after this press release, Google was the only one actually doing that. And I went and tried to explore ways of taking advantage of that and seeing what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so about 3 months into the webpage videos that we were showing, we started some captioning, and we noticed that the numbers of people showing up on the reports for viewership climbed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did some research, and this is still true today to some extent. If you go on and look for closed caption content on the internet, you'll find there is very little of any subject that is actually closed captioned.
Okay.
So I think we found a niche there, and we've since been exploring that and trying to add on to it. We've tried different formats.
Yeah, before we get into some of the technology behind it, maybe before we even go there, let's talk a little bit about why you were interested in closed captioning at all. Were there circumstances in the church or people you knew, or you just were kind of intrigued by the technology? What got you started, you know, looking at this?
Right. Well, I guess I might have some interest in that. I did some social work in the past, but I think what really caught me was just that one article that I just happened to see, and wondering, you know, I wonder how many people out there can't hear who use the internet. There is some statistic that the education department put out that said that 23 million people have some sort of hearing loss,
mm-hmm.
and And I guess it was a combination of seeing that potential there, and then also looking at the people who, I mean, there's an untold number of people who don't even attend church because either the FM transmitters are not sufficient for them,
right,
or they,
right,
they don't understand sign language. Mm-hmm. So there's, and we get letters from people now that support that, that there's lots of people who don't attend church at all because of hearing issues.
Sure.
And so that sort of has sort of got the interest started, and ever since then we've gotten feedback that supports that.
So you don't do signed services there in Yakima, for instance?
Well, we provide it.
Oh, you do? Okay.
It hasn't been, strangely, it's not been really taken advantage of that much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We advertise it on our website. You know, another thing, too, with sign language is it's very hard for a person conducting the sign language to do that job, especially of a sermon where, like, our pastors use a lot of scriptural references and
theological,
you know,
terms, right?
Exactly. So if someone who's signing, they have to spell out, you know, Boaz and Naomi.
Right.
By the time,
yeah, if you're in Leviticus, man, that's torture,
yeah,
right?
Right, exactly. By the time you've gotten past that, your pastor's already two, yeah, you know, paragraphs ahead.
That's right.
So captioning is sort of ideal. It's you know, it's it, you can, it shows up on the screen exactly when the pastor says it.
Right.
It can be shown over and over again without, you know, that extra person being there.
Mm-hmm. By the way, there are times where my wife would say I'm part of that 23% too.
Yeah, I was just thinking that that my mother-in-law is hearing impaired, and you know, it's kind of a silent disease. She doesn't, you know, make it real obvious to other people that she's hearing impaired, but she relies really heavily on the closed captioning. That's changed her life, literally. Mm-hmm. We just got some new video that was really an old television show that we got for Christmas, and she said, you know, I watched this back in the 70s, but I never knew what they were saying, and now with closed captioning she does. So just, yeah, really unlocks the world to those that are hearing impaired, and they are many lost souls that we need to reach with that precious gospel message, you know. So very exciting to see the response you've been getting to this.
So how, yeah, hard is it, John, to do this?
Well, technically it isn't that difficult, especially if you use some of the free tools that are out there. I'm most familiar with Google Video,
mm-hmm,
which takes care of a lot of things, like, first of all, it converts your whatever file, your Windows file, before you upload it into a Flash format.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes the script that you prepare and combines it. It takes care of a lot of the behind-the-scenes work. The only really technical part you have to worry about is, in addition to filming a good movie, is creating the captioning using a captioning program. Mm-hmm. And what we use is Subtitle Workshop, which is a freeware program. And by the way, everything we've done so far, with the exception of the Silverlight, is freeware. You can get this stuff online without any additional cost. And it's just a little bit of a learning curve of learning how to time the text, how to place them in appropriate places, how to make sure they're in the right lengths. Most of it is really just deciding how you want to present the blocks of words and, mm-hmm, for how long. It isn't, it's sort of a no-brainer once you get past the initial learning.
So there's no need to, you know, cool way of transcribing this other than just listening and typing.
That's right. Yeah. You basically bring up the video and you watch and you type and then through a few button clicks you're placing the words in the appropriate place.
So when you first started, how long did it take you to do a sermon? And has it changed now that you've done it for a,
yeah,
while?
Yeah. I think I told Sally some time ago it took about 20 hours to do a sermon.
That number sticks in my mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a barrier to entry, I think.
Yeah. And that might explain why there aren't many people doing this. But it does go a lot faster. Like now what I do is, instead of, first of all, I don't caption every sermon. I pick maybe one out of every 2 weeks.
Okay.
I do a couple hours here and there at nighttime when the girls are asleep. And I'm guessing it's probably, like, you know, at most 13 hours for, and it depends on how much your pastor talks too. Ours is, his are about 20 minutes or so, or, mm-hmm, sometimes 26, but,
okay.
Another thing you can do that's been helpful is...
Do you remind him that every minute over 20 is another two for you, 2 hours for you?
Yeah, I've told him that when it was a little wordy. I think he appreciates it more than anything. But another thing you can do is that these files that you prepare are turn into basic text files, coded text files, and they're very small. And you can email them to other people in your church. And you can say things like, hey, I'm starting off with minutes 10 to 15. Do you want to do 15
oh, cool.
to 20?
Yeah.
And then
mobilize
you could do
your volunteers,
Yeah, so you can, with a couple people, you can share the work. And then when it comes back in, you cut and paste in the text file. And it's, you know, that's one thing you can do. And I have done that before.
John, I'm wondering if it would be helpful, like my husband is a pastor and he writes out his sermons. Do you ever have the written sermon to go by so you don't have to type everything in?
No, and actually that's a very good question. Our pastor uses notes and he memorizes from his chicken scratch. And actually that wouldn't really help too much unless your pastor can actually say exactly what is written there.
Verbatim.
And it isn't so much, and also it's not the typing that is the difficult part, it's the timing. You know, even if you had the words and you could stick them all on the screen there and try to break them up and time them, you'd probably spend just as much time trying to place them than you would just typing what you hear. I don't think it benefits to have the written text ahead of time.
Interesting. Okay.
Have you ever tried running those video files, audio files through, like, you know, Dragon Naturally Speaking or any of those other OCR type softwares that
yeah, I've heard of those. And actually my wife has had some experience with that as a physician. Dragon is a dictation software that,
right.
I think there again I've never tried it. I think you'd still run into a similar problem with having written text already, that even if you pasted it all into the software,
right.
you still have to get apart, and you may find yourself, having equal time doing that. But again, I haven't tried it. I'd be curious to know if it really does save any time.
Okay.
So, John, I'm wanting you to wow our listeners now, because I know that you've had some really great success with the web pages you've put out on YouTube and that kind of thing. Can you tell us some of the numbers behind the viewership of your closed caption sermons?
Sure. Google is the primary place where we've had the most interest. And
YouTube won't let you put anything more than 10 minutes, so you got to go Google Video.
Yeah, YouTube has had, and also they've only recently allowed captioning. They just started a couple of months ago. But with Google, when this first started, you know, when Google has reports that show the numbers of views per video. And when I was first doing this, I used to have a routine where I'd get up and copy and paste the numbers off of that report and stick them on a spreadsheet. And at the time, we had a number of videos that were from a pastor's conference that were not public, that were always around baseline in viewership. And then we had five or six of our sermons from a few months that would get maybe a couple hundred views a week. But as soon as we started captioning, those sermons that were public and that were captioned, the lines just went up and 20 and 45 degree angles, viewership exploded.
Wow.
The largest one so far has been the Good Friday service from last March. We probably have over, of all the sermons together, somewhere over 200,000 views on Google.
Awesome.
And that one has probably got a fourth of them. And that's a whole hour, an entire service that was captioned. And it's by far the most popular one.
Mm-hmm.
We've also had responses that are curious. We've had people from Brazil saying, "Hey, I'm glad you captioned because English is a second language, and now I can understand this better." We've started doing some work with Wells multi-language
publications.
And Gonzalo Degadillo has translated four of our sermons, and we've seen numbers worldwide and those reports showing Latin America viewing us for the first time, and it's just very interesting to see the reports of, you know, where people are coming from and how they're being used, and And it was just a huge, the viewership grew hugely after recaption.
And I'm assuming that you're just tagging the videos somehow with closed captioning so that if people search closed caption in general, they're finding your work.
That's right. That's right. If you do searches now, in fact, you'll discover, like on YouTube, if you put in closed caption, some people use that as an advertisement. You'll see hundreds of music videos on YouTube that say they're closed captioned, and then when you go to play them, they're not. There's more abuse of the word than there's actually real closed captioning and on the internet. So
if our visitor, if our viewers want or listeners wanted to look at your stuff, see how that's done, how would they go about finding your stuff?
Well, first you can you can come to our webpage, which is www.redeemeryakima.org, mm-hmm. and we have a media page there. There's also on that page a link to a tutorial. I just set up a very basic web page that has a tutorial of has a few things. First, it has a PowerPoint presentation that is visual that shows the steps of how to use Subtitle Workshop. There's a description of how to upload to Google Video, which is free. And those things you can see in, on use on our website in the media page.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a new thing we've tried, which is Silverlight. It was mentioned in a previous episode. This is something new that was debuted in the NBC Olympics. It's a Microsoft's version of Flash. But we obtained some donated software, and we have some of that on our site too. And that has been great because we're not dependent on Google Video, or and the presentation is really nice too.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't you tell me your file size is a lot smaller with Silverlight as well?
Yes, the larger the file, it seems like the less it used to take. Like that Good Friday service, for example, it almost is almost half the. The original size of the Windows file that it was. I'd say it probably cuts it down by most videos by about a third.
That's
and
awesome.
It also has a nice something they call profile adaptive. So you can watch these videos in widescreen and have it fill up the entire image area of your monitor, regardless of the size of your monitor. And that's kind of nice because before it was always you were restricted to set size, you know, a mm-hmm. small window. Now we can have really big images.
Do you do anything with your shut-ins that may enjoy the closed captioning as well, and maybe they're not on the internet? Do you publish this to a disc or a DVD or something like that for them, or maybe you don't have a large number of shut-ins there being a smaller congregation?
That's a very good question. It's one that's asked of us. Can you make DVDs? Actually, that's a problem. I don't know how to put captioning on DVDs except by using titling. You might see this too on the internet some, but some people like to take the movie making programs and use the credit function or the titles to type in the words, and it's just so time consuming to do it that way that mm-hmm. It almost isn't worth it. But I don't know how to make DVDs that play on a DVD player. Mm-hmm. We have, however, able to put them on flash drives, like the Silverlight. We can put that on flash drives for computer use.
Right.
So that's about the extent of it. But I haven't figured out how to crack into those DVD files with their coding, and maybe there's someone out there who does.
Now, when you go on Google Video, do you have to turn on closed captioning, or do you get it just by playing that particular video?
I believe you just get it, but if not, there's a button. I know, like YouTube, for example, has a button that says CC. That's the sign for closed captioning. You just click on that, and it will appear.
So I know there are some applications that will essentially go out to a source that you send it to and download it as an AVI file or convert it as a Swift file or something like that. I'm wondering if that's mm-hmm. a way to kind of a back-end way of posting it and then getting it down to your computer in a closed caption, with it embedded, and then burn that to a DVD.
Yeah.
So I think there would be people interested in that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, there might be a way to do that, but one of the problems is that the way captioning works is it's a separate file. It's not embedded in the movie. So what's actually happening is you have a player program that is on the website.
Oh, so you have two you essentially have two players.
Yeah, you have a like the Flash version, for example, has Shockwave Flash Player. You have to upload that player to your website into the tree, and along with it goes your video file and your captioned file. Mm-hmm. And it is that player at the website that coordinates the two to play together. It looks like it's embedded, but it's not. It's an orchestration of the two.
Okay.
So one of the problems is if you wanted to import it back down as, you know, to a disk or something, you would be missing the player and the, you know, it's, I don't know how you get all three together on a disk just yet to play like that.
Yeah, well, maybe some of our listeners have experience.
But there's got to be to be a way, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. I'm seeing this as an area where 2009 is going to be a good year. I'm just feeling it already, and we're going to have you back on in a few months and see what kind of progress you've made, because technology is changing every day, and already you've found multiple ways to do what you do and improve on the process. So I bet we'll figure all this out.
Yeah, you got anything else? You got anything else cooking, John, in the church there as far as technology is concerned?
No. Well, we did a podcast, and I'm thankful to your information on that. So
cool.
We have a podcast going. Haven't figured out how to caption that yet, but that's new. And other than that, it's just going ahead with trying to reach as many people as we can. And I think I don't have any new ideas just now, but we'll keep trying.
Well, that's what it's all about, reaching as many people, and it sounds like this is a way to do that just based on your numbers. And boy, it doesn't sound it sounds like it's getting easier and easier to do. So if you if our listeners are interested in doing that, visit Redeemer's website to look at that. And I think we'll be putting up a wiki, right, Sally, that will provide some more information as well.
Feel free to email me. Right, and feel free to email me, too. There's a couple of churches, one in Texas and one in Indiana, that are starting to do this now. So,
oh, cool.
And I'd be glad to coach anyone through it or any questions you have, so that'd be fine.
Very good.
Super. Thanks so much for joining us, John. Blessings on your continued work there with closed captioning, and we'll keep tabs and keep contributing to the show. We'd love to hear from you guys.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Enjoy your show.
Sally, John did provide some follow-up to that interview, as we mentioned before we played it. He provided some links to a few of his most recent video postings as well.
That's right. We're going to include a link to the most recent one. He wrote to us, you know, we asked him the question about how long does this take. When he originally wrote to us, probably early last year, Martin, he told me it took him 20 hours to close caption one sermon. And I thought, wow, there's a barrier to entry. You know, maybe we aren't going to get into this business real quickly. But his most recent sermon, he timed himself. He said it was a 17-minute sermon, and it took him 6 hours to caption it. He spread that out over a few nights, and it wasn't too difficult of a process. So very encouraging. He's doing it with the Microsoft Silverlight product, so he's getting a lot smaller file size and very good quality. I think you'll want to check out one of John's sermons and see how it looks.
Yeah, and I think anybody can be trained to do that. So I think this probably falls into the category of trying to find a volunteer or a team of volunteers who would be willing to do this. Spend the 6 hours or 8 hours or whatever it is necessary if you feel that this is a ministry that you want to pursue. And John has been at it for, what, a year now, I would assume, right? The last Lent, it sounded like he started. So I don't know that he's been doing it every Sunday, but it sounds like they feel it's a worthwhile ministry. And, boy, from the comments that we read, sure sounds like it.
Definitely. So if you get into closed captioning, we'd love to hear how it's going for you, what kind of challenges you've met with, and what kind of success you've had as well.
And how do they talk to us?
Oh, there's lots of ways. The number one way is to just visit our show notes website, which is wellstech.wells.net, and you'll find links for email and voicemail and delicious tagging and our Facebook group. All of those things are listed there on our website.
So come talk to us. We'd love to hear from you. Our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, this week I'm going to actually give you three different links. They're from MySpace page, actually. Someone went to the trouble of pulling together free software from Microsoft. Microsoft offers a lot of really cool utilities and add-in software that can make your Windows experience much better. But it's spread out across the huge Microsoft website. There really isn't any kind of an index that pulls together all of the software that's available for free download from Microsoft. But this person actually pulled it together, and there's a page of XP add-ins, there's a page of Vista add-ins, and a page of Office add-ins, templates and clip art and all kinds of things for Office. So if you're a Microsoft software user, you might want to check out the ultimate list of free software from Microsoft. And I just bet you'll find something that can make your life a little bit easier.
Very cool. Yeah, XP, Vista, and Office. Cool. Yeah, I've been on the Microsoft site many, many, many times trying to find stuff, and just the search is almost useless because you're searching across, I don't know, millions and millions of pages, and just not all overly intuitive. So these lists are really invaluable. So check that out. Thanks, Sally. My pick, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is going back to the productivity work that I did with the seminary last week. And for all of you that are Gmail users, this is a pick that you may want to consider. This is a perfect pick for those that are both Gmail users and Getting Things Done fans. We've talked about that in the past. We mentioned it on the show again last week. This marries the two. There are a couple requirements. It's called GTD Inbox, and it essentially transforms your Gmail into a productivity tool that is usable by those who kind of follow the methodology of GTD or Getting Things Done. It's only for Firefox because it is a Firefox plugin. There's nothing for Internet Explorer. So you have to be using Firefox, running Gmail, and kind of get the concept of GTD. So it's maybe a small audience, but I think a growing one. But essentially, it lays on top, and it creates the ability to, you know, one of the key tenets of GTD is setting next actions. So it basically allows you to take any email or email thread, as those Gmail users know. Gmail creates threads, not just a single email, so it groups emails together. And it allows you to make those into a next action. It has all kinds of categorization tools. You can put things into projects. You can put them on a reference list. It essentially uses the tagging system that Gmail uses, but then hides it out of the way so that you don't have to look at that. Then it makes it real easy with one click to show all your next actions, to show all the things that you have attached to a particular project, and so on and so forth. I think they've done a great job with this and has really helped me kind of clear the decks, you know, when I'm using Gmail. I use Gmail at home as my primary email tool, and I use Outlook here at work. But I can put all my church stuff in there, all kinds of categories that I can create that would just make it real easy for me to grab at a single notice, you know, what is all the stuff that's associated to a particular topic, project, next actions, who am I waiting on stuff for, et cetera, et cetera. So it's free, so it installs in about 2 minutes, and you do have to install this on each Firefox browser that you use because it does work with the browser itself. But it doesn't do anything nasty to your Gmail if you're looking at it on a computer that doesn't have it. It just adds these tags to it, and would highly recommend it if you're interested in kind of getting more productive. There's a great website. It is gtdgmail.com. There's a great how-to section there that you can kind of go through a tutorial about getting started to figure out how to create to-dos and how to set this whole thing up. So well worth the effort.
And you answered my question. I like the price tag.
Right.
That's always important. And, you know, some of those GTD solutions can get quite pricey.
Right.
So nice to have a free solution.
Exactly. So check it out. All right. What do we have that we'd like to share with our listeners regarding Wells.net, the Synod's website?
Well, I wanted to point our listeners to the Together newsletter. This is a newsletter published from the President's Office of Wells. Twice each month, comes out at together.wells.net, and you can subscribe via email or I'm sorry, that's hard to say.
Or RSS.
RSS. Yes. So check it out. It's full of great news. It's really speaking to our Synod Convention's desire that was clearly communicated at the 2007 convention for clear communication. Mm-hmm. And this is our way of getting the Synod's news out in a very timely fashion. It's provided in a really easy to read format, and it's also always got a link to a PDF version so you can easily copy it for your church bulletins. That's what we do here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye, so that we know that news is getting out to everyone via the church bulletin. So I encourage you to check it out. Again, it's at together.wells.net.
Very good. Sally, if I'm reading our mind map correctly, which our longtime listeners will know, that's how we do the show. We go around the clock on a mind map. It looks like we have a ton of feedback.
Yeah, isn't that exciting?
Yeah.
Lots of people talking to us this week. I'll get things started with a message we received from David Savatsky. He's in our World Missions office. He does a really neat job. He promotes the World Missionaries speaking tours when they're on furlough and they go around and speak in the various schools and congregations. And one thing that David has a need to do, and he wrote to us about it, was record Skype conversations, being able to do actually what we're doing right now, Martin. We're having a Skype conversation and being able to capture those so he could turn that into some kind of an audio file or podcast file on their website, that kind of thing. So you have some pointers for him since you're our audio brain.
Absolutely. I'm not, I don't know how brainy it is, but it's not rocket science, so anybody can really do it. We do a couple things because, you know, technology sometimes breaks, and you would hate to go through a 45-minute show and then for me to tell you, Sally, well, we got to do it again.
That's only happened to us like twice.
That's right. And that was early on. That is not we've learned. So that's okay. That's a good sign. So we'd have a couple backups. One thing that you can use for just raw recording of Skype conversations, and this will work in almost all circumstances, is a product called Pamela, and that's one that's highly visible on the Skype site itself. So that's a product you can get a link to from there. I don't remember what the cost is. We'll put a link to it in the show notes, but it's fairly low cost, and it does a nice job. So we use it as a backup. One thing that it allows you to do is record the separate conversations individually. So if you and I, Sally, were talking, I could have mine on one track and your voice on the other track, and I could edit one without having to edit both, which is kind of handy if, you know, there are background noises or whatever that we need to get rid of on one side without squashing the conversation of the other person. So that's one tool. So I use that on every show. Very often I never have to use that because it's not as high a quality as the approach that we use, which is through a regular mixer. We use a Lesis mixer, a multi-mix FireWire, a mixer that has 12 inputs. So actually I basically have a computer dedicated to Skype and send the audio out into the mixer. And then from the mixer, I send an audio out from it into a solid-state recording device from Marantz. It's a Marantz Professional. I think this is on the wiki, by the way. Solid-state recorder, and I think the I got to put on my glasses here. PMD 660. It's in small print. And it's been working really well. It records right to a CF card, so there's no moving parts, and you just plug it in, and away it goes. So that way I have the ability to, I guess what the professionals call, shape the sound, so I can move levels up and down, because sometimes we have interviewees come on that are a little bit louder or softer depending on their connection. We can take the lows down or bring the mid-levels up, et cetera, et cetera. So I sound like I know what I'm talking about, but basically I just move dials until I get the right results. So that's what we do here on the Wells Tech Podcast. I know Gail Potratz has a couple of suggestions as well, one for the PC, Power Gramo, and one for the Mac called Ecamm, and I know that she's had success with both of those as well. So lots of opportunities to do that recording, and it's a common question. So thanks for the question, Dave.
You know, Martin, you mentioned the wiki. Maybe it's time for us to add a wiki page about recording Skype, you know, kind of pulling together all of that information that you described. So
there you go.
More opportunity to share information on the wiki.
WellsTech.wetpaint.com.
There you go. All right, moving on in our community feedback then, we heard from Cindy Krieger. Cindy is a member of Shepherd of the Hills in Lansing, Michigan, and she has regularly fed us great information from Michigan and her role as the IT coordinator for the state of Michigan. She gets exposure to a lot of cool stuff in that regard. But she actually wrote specifically to me, and I've got a little bit of envy going on here, because what she said was she lives across town from TechSmith. Now, if you listen to our Picks of the Year show on New Year's Eve, you'll know that I came out of the closet as being just a huge TechSmith fan. TechSmith created Snagit software as well as Camtasia Studio and Jing, all of which are just awesome for screen capture and recording and that kind of thing. Just I'm number one on their fan list for sure. And Cindy wrote to say that she was at a Mac users meeting in Lansing, which happens to be the same town where TechSmith is located, and she saw a demo of Camtasia Studio for Mac, which is going to be coming out in the summer of 2009. They don't currently have a Mac version of Camtasia Studio, but what she saw was very impressive to her, and she also saw some information about Jing, which you can find at jingproject.com. Mm-hmm. So both of those are great for doing screen recording. And if you have a need to record information from your computer screen, I encourage you to check them out. We'll have links in the show notes.
Great. We also heard from Brian Kamm. He apparently listened to our last show and found the link to the presentations that I posted for the productivity workshop or class that I taught at seminary last week, wondering if those were available in PowerPoint format. He'd like to use those in maybe teaching some of those principles to his church council. I thought that was a great idea. Unfortunately, they weren't created in PowerPoint, although that is a function that is available using the tool that I use, which is SlideRocket.com. I've talked about them in the past. SlideRocket is an online presentation software package, which basically has no offline component, although you can download them through an offline player with a subscription. So I never created them in PowerPoint, and there is no export to PowerPoint function within SlideRocket itself. So unfortunately, Brian, they are basically there. You can play them as is with the little player that comes with SlideRocket, but that's really the whole point of a tool like SlideRocket is you do it online. It's a Web 2.0 cloud computing kind of app, and the reason that I used it is, and I'm beginning to use it more, is I had a whole class session on cloud computing and Web 2.0 apps and how the church office or school office could maybe take advantage of that. So I decided, well, I might as well use it. So sorry, no PowerPoint format, but please enjoy those, and I'm happy to provide them.
Very good. Thanks for sharing that, Martin. Our next feedback came from Alyssa Dunning, who's one of our coworkers at Wells. She's in the web services department, and she sent us links to two cool Web 2.0 applications that you might want to check out. The first is called ScreenToaster.com, and it allows you to do free online screen recording. So no software whatsoever recording software required. You just go to the website and click a button, and you're making a screencast video right there.
So is that only of web pages? I haven't looked at it.
Yeah, it looks like it's of whatever's on your computer screen, so not just web pages.
Oh, I wonder how they do that. I'm going to have to explore that.
Yeah, because it is cross-platform. Weird. It mm-hmm. works on Windows, Mac, and Linux, so that's pretty exciting to see.
Really?
I haven't checked it out fully yet, but I think it's worth looking into if you want to do some screencasting.
And that's kind of like the Jing concept, right?
Exactly, okay. And it allows you to embed a flash video on any of your websites or anything like that.
Cool.
The other one that Alyssa pointed us to is called TripIt, TRIPIT.com, and this is a travel planning website where you can upload your travel plans, be it lodging, cars, plane, flights, trains, cruises, whatever those plans are, and you're going to get itineraries with all your plans, with weather, with maps, with restaurants, all kinds of really cool information around the trip that you're planning to take. And it's accessible via paper, email. You can get it on your calendar. You can have it delivered to your mobile device, and you can share it with colleagues. So if you're in a position where you do a lot of traveling and other colleagues are traveling as well, you can see where your itineraries overlap and those kind of things. Sounds like a really powerful Web 2.0 tool, another one that we need to check out.
I've heard people speak very highly of that, and I haven't tried it myself, but I'm going to take a look.
Okay. Next, we heard from Brent Nimmers. Brent is a member of Atonement in Plano, Texas, and he sent us a link to the O Culture site, specifically to their foreign language page. And I checked it out. It's got an extensive list of training materials for all different languages, and a lot of it is in MP3 format, so you can actually download audio training from iTunes or wherever that you can listen to help you brush up on your language skills in a particular language. And Brent also pointed out that they have a lot of subjects on this website, not just language training, but humanities to computer science. They've kind of got it all there. So you might want to check out the O Culture website.
Very good. Anything else?
One more comment, and it was from our friend John Shoesmith. John from Redeemer in Yakima, Washington, who we spoke with earlier, mentioned to us that he is getting into some new things besides closed caption and sermons. He's looking at podcasting their Bible classes. And John was writing to us asking us about how we get podcast statistics, you know, how many people are listening to our podcast. Martin, I don't know if you have any insight into that based on what we know about the Wells Tech podcast.
It's really hard to put your finger on. And one of the things that we use is FeedBurner. So whenever you subscribe in at least a couple of locations, you can track subscriptions via FeedBurner. I haven't looked it up lately. It was headed towards 100 on FeedBurner, but that does not account for anybody playing it online, going to the website, etc. So I really have no idea how many people listen. I know that there are some, and we love the feedback that we get. So I think there are different ways to do that. You can use, I believe, Google Analytics to track hits to a page, but I don't know that you can track plays. We should look into that. I think that would be great to know.
Yeah. So thanks, John, for that question. Martin, I guess that brings us to what's coming up on next week's Wells Tech podcast.
And for all our Gail Potratz fans, Gail is going to be on with us again next week, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. And we're going to talk again about smart boards. I had the opportunity to sit down with smart board people last week, so I have some information to share there. And Gail's experience with smart boards, that's a growing trend within our synod and our synod's classrooms. So we will be talking to Gail about that and all things classroom technology. So if you've got questions you'd like us to discuss related to classroom technologies, we know we have a lot of teachers listening, send those to us before the show and we will talk about them. That should about do it for the show this week, Sally. Thanks again for joining me. Always a pleasurable part of my week to be able to talk about technology and ministry. Let's close the show with music from Kevin Lersch, our Wells featured artist this week, singing one of my favorite songs, Mary, Did You Know, from his album, O Holy Night. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Would someday walk on water. Mary, did you know that your baby boy would save our sons and daughters? Did you know that your baby boy has come to make you new? This child that you soon deliver you. Mary, did you know that your baby boy would give sight to a blind man? Mary, did you know that your baby boy will calm a storm with his hand? Did you know that your baby boy has walked where angels trod? When you kissed your little baby, then you kissed the face of God. Is the grave.